Welcome to Lilydale Radio, featuring topics about spiritualism, mediumship, healing, spirituality, and the Lilydale Assembly, the world's largest center for the religion, philosophy, and science of spiritualism. This is Lilydale Radio.
Happy Wednesday, everyone. This is Wednesdays with Willa, and I am your host, Willa White. This is my weekly podcast show that I do as part of Lilydale Radio, and it's a spiritual conversation that I have with you. I'm usually a special guest on the show, and it's a topic as it relates to spiritualism, mediumship, healing, faith, family, and more. And it's a special time that you can come once a week and join with me and my guest in this conversation and in this idea of spiritual thought and upliftment, and perhaps have some inspiration for the week ahead. So I'm glad that you can tune in. The best way to tune in to the show would be on my Facebook page, Willa White Medium, and so you can like and follow and then be able to share the programs and look at the archived videos of past shows. I've had some wonderful guests on the show, and it's great to be able to share with all of you. The other way that you can tune into the show is through Blog Talk Radio, and that is by blogtalkradio.com/LilydaleRadio, and that's an audio-only feature one, but you can certainly tune into that way if you wish. So I'm glad that you could join us for this morning. Our topic today is war experiences in spiritualism, and I thought this would be a especially beautiful topic to have as we're coming up on Memorial Day weekend, and we certainly want to honor those that have given their lives in military service. So I am delighted to have as my guest today, Tom Regani. Thank you for being on the show today, Tom.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes. And Tom is a true sweetheart of a guy, I have to say. He is a registered Lilydale medium, and he a retired social studies teacher.
Yes.
30 years at the local school district?
Right.
And so he's had that background, as well as being a medium, and he is a veteran, and it's of the Vietnam era there. So, yes, you certainly have had a wide range of experiences in your lifetime. And one of the other special things with Tom that I have to just mention and honor is Tom's wife, Kitty Regani, Catherine Regani. he likes to use the more formal name Catherine, although most people called her Kitty. And she was a registered Lilydale medium as well. So two mediums as spouses. That was very, very special. And
yes.
And we certainly honor and miss her.
Yes.
Get along with you. So, yeah. So Tom has had the unique opportunity to be a medium and be married to a medium. Takes a special man to do that, right?
Well, I still think you ought to have a program with spouses of mediums.
There we go. Like a panel of them.
What do you think?
What do you think? What's that like? You know?
Yes.
I think it's just fun. So Tom was so gracious to come on the show today and talk about his personal experiences. You know, he's been a spiritualist for many years and very solid in the teachings of spiritualism.
Thank you.
And I'm really excited about our conversation today.
Don't get their hopes up. No, not at all. I mean, it's everyone's journey is unique.
Yes.
Okay, so how you get here is, how should I say, it influences how you look at the journey, because I haven't reached the destination yet. Because
sure.
When you get to the destination, the journey is done.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, it started, I came from a very, very, how should I say,
You came from a Catholic religious background.
Right, and it was a fairly strict household, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to college, that's when I began to question what path I wanted to take as far as my spirituality would go.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see some of the answers in my religion of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But it really didn't, I didn't know where to go because there wasn't anything else that I was aware of.
True. Yeah, most people don't necessarily know about spiritualism.
Right. And at that, in that day and time, if people came to Lilydale and the priest was really upset about it, he could excommunicate you.
Oh, wow.
Because you're going to that place, you know.
Which is so interesting because I've done readings for people who are priests and nuns, like currently in the profession, and they have told me that nothing's wrong with this.
No, but see,
isn't that interesting how times change?
You figure, for those, there's some people I know that have seen, it's been 50 years since I've been in Vietnam. So that means that there were a whole bunch of years before that.
Yes.
And the church was very strict, and the priest was, the word was,
and it was practically the word of God.
Well, that was considered that.
Yes.
You know, and I'm not trying to denigrate any religion, but the idea of having to follow that stricture, you know, and it coming into conflict. Because if you didn't do these things, then there would be a certain amount of punishment.
Well, I think with spiritualism, one of the things that's been important to us is that we have a direct communication, a direct experience with God.
And
there's no middleman, per se.
Right. And that probably is the crux what really resonates with me, is the idea of personal responsibility.
Yes.
It's how should I say, in some cases it may be considered a burden.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also an understanding that your path is in your hands, and you can't blame anybody, or you can't say, I was forced into this.
True.
All right?
True.
Thoughts are things. We make our own decisions, you know, and people will say, well, okay, what did you do in Vietnam? Well, we're not going to talk about the nitty-gritty.
Right.
But they'll say, well, if you had to follow orders, how does that, come with the idea of personal responsibility? Well, you look at it, why was I there? I was not drafted.
Yes.
I chose to be in the Army.
You chose, so when that came down to it, you decided, I'm going to go and help.
I felt I had a debt to this country because it gave me the opportunity to debate issues that were not allowable in any other parts of the world.
Yeah, the freedoms that United States represent. Yeah.
And I grew up in what I call the John Wayne generation. You know,
that's true. That's true, John Wayne.
And you know, there was no gray area. It was white, you know, black, and
mm-hmm.
either you're for me or against me.
Yes,
you
that's true.
Them. that type of thing. So to pay back my debt to the country, because my family, my siblings, we're second-generation Americans.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, I stop and think about that and going, holy smokes.
Yeah. Whoosh.
You know, but I came from a large family. I have six siblings, or had six. One's on the other side now.
Mm-hmm.
And so you were given opportunities that even my parents weren't, because they came up through the Great Depression and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So I figured, okay, I have a debt. Let's pay it back. By making that decision, I said, I will put, and because I actually, you know, you get sworn in, and I will obey all, you know, orders of those that.
Yeah,
so
you take that oath when you go
right.
into the military.
So that meant that I chose to put myself in a situation where other people would decide what I do, and I'm still responsible.
Yeah.
Because even though I was under orders, I also had the opportunity to look at it and say, do I follow it or don't I?
Yeah.
And there are consequences to everything, and you need to be aware of the consequences.
True.
So the experience in Vietnam was, not just in Vietnam, but the military in general. I spent 3 years on active duty as an enlisted man. And I met some wonderful people there. And I met some not so wonderful people there. And there's a bonding that takes place. Okay. And one of my two friends, what I consider friends, is of the Christian faith, but he married a Catholic, and he is a staunch supporter of his wife's beliefs. So when they need help, he's there to support her.
Yeah, yeah.
So I bonded with him, and I got to see his way of looking at things, and we talk about how things go.
About spiritual matters.
Oh, absolutely.
And how it relates
from
to
the two
the
different
decisions.
Ways.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I had the fortunate or unfortunate opportunity to be there in 1968 for the Tet Offensive, which totally changed America's perception of the war, and was able to survive some interesting situations. And one of the things that when people think about that, they think about the, what do you want to call it, the combat situations, okay?
Sure, that's what comes to mind, all those movies out there.
Right,
sure.
But they really don't understand what else is involved in living in that environment. Okay, for 365 days, you lived in an environment where you couldn't tell the good guys from the bad guys.
Mm.
So there's always that level of stress.
Yeah.
Then you're in a different part of the world that's totally different.
Yeah, the culture shock alone from that. Yeah.
Right. And then on top of that, you've got the climate. And then you've got the other disease-type things. I mean, so you've got all of this. So you're living in a constant pressure cooker. So how do you relieve this?
Yeah, how do you? How do you, Tom?
You know, well, one of the things you would think of would be your religion, but my religion didn't support me.
Hmm.
And I didn't support it either. I mean, it was a trade-off. And the idea, the thing is, I began to see the people around me. I considered the good fortune of having to live with the Vietnamese. My unit was a very small specialized unit
mm-hmm.
in the Mekong Delta.
Mm-hmm.
So I lived basically with the Vietnamese. I ate with them. I partied with them. You know, I fought with them. The whole thing.
Yeah.
And I got to come to the understanding that they are a wonderful people. And you know, a lot of the GIs have negative because of the Harbin Army and the unreliability. Because of my perspective,
mm-hmm.
I got to meet them, and in some cases even their families. And it made me understand that basically, as far as I'm concerned, you couldn't find a more loyal friend. As an advisor to the Harbin,
mm-hmm.
I would make suggestions. I found out, much to my embarrassment, that they didn't take them as suggestions. They took that as fact.
Oh.
So if I suggested we do something, they did it. And it got to the point where I started realizing that the casualties they were suffering were because of my decisions.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
So that, you know, that adds to.
Yes.
You know, the understanding. And it also came to the idea of, I wasn't fond of the Viet Cong, but it finally dawned on me, they're doing their job just like I'm doing my job.
Right.
So, yes, I'm not going to say, okay, here I am, take me away. No, but I'm not going to, I'll put it this way, hate you because of what you're doing. Because some of the things that I did, I'm not very proud of, especially removed from the situation.
Yeah.
And then I get to see, I had an opportunity before Tet. I got there in November. Tet was at the end of January the following year. And they wanted GIs who would be willing to teach English to the Vietnamese. So I said, okay, I've got the time. Things weren't really that hectic, and I would be Vietnamese anyway.
Sure.
But you taught by the oral method.
Okay.
There were no books. They were not allowed to read. They were not allowed to write things down. I worked in a girls' school,
mm-hmm.
And the blackboard was literally a board painted black. So you had to write around the splinters.
So it wasn't chalk.
Oh, you used chalk.
Really?
On a blackboard.
On a black
paper. But the chalk was sort of like a chunk.
A chunk.
And it broke very easily type of thing. And you would use this to emphasize certain things that they couldn't pick up on. And being the, how should I say, interesting person I can be.
Very interesting.
I would teach, because they were different levels. In the primary level, where they know nothing,
mm-hmm.
I basically did a strip show.
Oh.
I take off my belt and say belt, and I take off my shirt and say shirt. We didn't get all the way down, but we,
right.
you know. Things
but
like
some
this,
basics.
Some basics to get us started. Right. And then in the more advanced classes, I try to mess with their head. You know, they all like the Inky Dinky Spider.
Oh, the Itsy Bitsy Spider right off the water spout.
Yeah, and we go like this, and the whole class
oh,
expands
yeah.
and do that. And
well,
they,
just like for teaching little children.
Right. Because, you know, and then some of the smart ones figured they had it, and then I just turn around and say, ice cream for ice cream. And that.
All these American expressions that you decided to try to download into their brains.
Well, the whole idea is, to them, they couldn't tell the difference between ice cream and ice cream.
Yes.
So I'd have to chalk that on the board
nuances.
And say, see what
these
what
are
is.
Tricks.
Right.
Don't get tricked.
So I really enjoyed that experience, and it also taught me some other things.
There's probably more laughter in that situation.
Well, that too, and they would go back and they would talk to people, and I was getting favorable reviews, although I wasn't doing it for that. But when I first started, the school, we were in a girls' school, actually, and the classrooms were connected, but the entrance all came off of a central courtyard.
Mm-hmm.
So I come walking in time for class, and I look around, and there's nobody there. The room's totally empty. So I'm waiting, and I'm waiting, and I'm waiting, and the class was about an hour and a half to 2 hours long.
Mm-hmm.
One day I go over to the director and I said, where's my class? And they said, well, where have you been? I said, I'm standing outside the room waiting for them to show up. And he turns around and goes, that's why they're not there. They're waiting for you to go in first.
Oh, my goodness.
So, I mean, here's a culture.
There's a cultural difference, for sure.
And so I walk in, and sure enough, the room's filled within, 3 to 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I look around. And you want to talk about diverse classroom. I have a 10-year-old, and I've got a 60-year-old, and everything in between. And I've got 4 Buddhist monks. And they're all sitting there. And I'm like, wait a minute. These people are smarter and have more world experience than I do, and I'm supposed to be the expert?
And teach them the English.
Oh.
So the people came from the whole community then.
Right.
To learn from you.
Well, to say from the whole community needs to be qualified, because these people were all of, excluding the monks, of I would say middle to upper middle. You're
okay.
dealing more with the elite, because the quote peasants, when they were done working, they didn't have any energy.
Sure.
And a family of 4 back then was working for about $1 a day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not per person. The family of 4.
The family of 4.
So that was about all, and they would earn enough to eat. So, but I mean, seeing this, and then I didn't know the name, so there was a lot of pointing going on and type of things like that. You know, they had that. They would all stand before they would answer,
mm-hmm.
and they wouldn't sit until I said, "Please sit." You look at an American classroom today.
Well, that was standard back in the day of classrooms. In American classrooms, is standing up to give your answer. And
well,
there was
as my teaching career extended, it became less and less and less, because you're interfering with my rights.
Yeah.
Don't get me started on that.
Yeah,
one.
I know.
But by seeing the way the people worked and how they thought, and it was an ironic situation, because you would see the Buddhist monks, and they would come every morning with their bowl,
mm-hmm.
because that's how they supported themselves.
Sure.
And the people would feed them, and they would come to us, and we'd give them stuff. And then to watch the people, there was a Buddhist there was a Buddhist shrine, temple, whatever. It was a small one. Every day, somebody would come and clean it out. And they would wash everything down with water. The water is very important to them.
Mm-hmm.
But there was no water there. They had to bring water from the river, which was about four blocks away, in heavy buckets.
Buckets and buckets.
And they did this every
bucket
day.
Bucket brigade.
Right. So, I mean, but I got to see these things, and I began to wonder and question, you know, again, the idea of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one instance when I went to a Catholic mass, and I don't fault the chaplain, but we're sitting in a Quonset hut, which is a half metal barrel, basically made out of aluminum.
A metal barrel?
I mean, it's a huge,
huge
structure.
You know, so that's a Quonset hut. Okay.
And it was used as the theater, but this morning it was used as a church. But the night before, the airfield had been shelled.
Mm-hmm.
And there had been people inside there that had been severely wounded. So, I mean, I don't mean to be gross, but there's blood all over the place.
Oh, wow.
Okay, and so we're here, and it's Easter, for those of you who understand that. And the chaplain gets up, and he starts the Mass, and his sermon is about how God wants us to go out and do in the other guy. And I'm going, wait a minute. I didn't come here to hear this.
Right.
I've got enough of this from the rest of it. That was it. That basically was the turning point. I said, I don't need this.
Right.
And I know why he was doing this, because that's part of what his job was. And all
the pep talk.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And don't worry, guys. You're doing what, you know, he's not going to be mad at you. Of course, God had to be a male, you know, sitting someplace up there, which I also wanted to know, why God was a male when where did the children come from? They don't come from guys. You know? Oh, they come from the weaker sex. Then how come nature has chosen women to do that if they're weaker? I thought, so I had all these things going through my head.
Sure.
And I said, there's got to be a better way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's got to be a way for me to come to terms with some of the things that I wanted to do that they wouldn't let me do. Some of them were even nastier.
Mm-hmm.
And to reconcile with the people that I put in harm's way who never came back.
Right.
And I got to the point where I figured I had to find my own path. And that in order for me to do that, I had to have, if you want to call it, a direct communication with God. I didn't need
The middleman.
The middleman.
Mm-hmm.
The idea being that, you know, you played, as kids, we played the telephone game, you know, and
somebody whispered,
oh, I got a cat. And by the time it gets to the other side, it's, oh, you had a giraffe, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So things get lost in translation.
They sure do.
So I said, okay, I can talk to God. God can talk to me. I don't need this.
Mm-hmm.
And God's not going to get angry at me if I don't jump through certain hoops that man made.
Right, the limitations of man.
Okay, so the idea of it didn't give me free rein to do anything I wanted, because, again, the idea of personal responsibility.
So, yeah, the spiritual natural laws are so
right
in place for everyone
and
to learn and grow.
You know, the importance of the golden rule, as all religions have some version of this. Do you like to feel pain? No. Then why do you do it to somebody else?
Mm-hmm.
Does it make you feel better? Then I think you're a little, you have issues to be dealt with.
Yes.
You know, and I also came to the understanding that if I talk to God, I could talk to God the way I'm talking to you. I don't need this is the way we do it. You know, I think probably in my cultural understanding, the best prayer is the Lord's Prayer, but there's many versions of that as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the idea of having a strictured thing to say to God, well, you know, things change.
The prayers have to change depending on where you are in
and the situation.
But I think some people do need some sort of structure initially because they don't know what they're doing.
And
they need some sort of structure, at least to focus, a focal point. And then eventually they need to seek the truth within their own hearts and souls.
And see, a lot of the formalized religions don't make exception or don't create the aura or the understanding that it's okay for you to disagree with what we taught you.
Yeah.
Because you're finding your own path. And if you want to take the wrong step, that's unfortunate. But that's your choice. The consequences are yours, and you have to deal with them.
Well, what I do think is important is the idea that there are consequences.
And I
understand why they would want to say, hey, there are consequences.
Oh, right. But you can still bring children up without putting an absent power that's going to do nasty things to you and put you in places that, you know, would be uncomfortable if you don't do that.
Yeah.
So the whole idea, the thing is, I mean, my son was and he follows the Catholic faith because that's what his mother did, although at the time he was born, we both said, no, we're not going to do this. His grandmother, on the other hand, secretly baptized him. It took years before she danced around and told us that. And I'm going, but he had the choice. He had the choice to either follow the religion or not follow it.
Absolutely.
Once he chose to follow it, even though I wasn't doing it anymore, I made sure that he met the specifications
for it.
And he said, why do I have to go to church and you don't? I said, because you chose to do this, and this is. I said, when you get to be 18, you're your own person. You can choose or not choose.
Yes.
He's made his decision. So you can do things like this.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of praying by talking to God,
mm-hmm.
you know.
But I think even in Catholicism, as much as there is the middleman, there is the talk to God yourself.
The church has changed tremendously in a positive way in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
It still has a lot to, as far as I'm concerned, a lot of things to change as far as empowering the female aspect of the congregation. Okay, you know, women make up half the population or more.
Yeah.
And so by not really utilizing that. It amazes me why somebody would want to do that. I mean, I'm not a, how should I put it? I'm just a chauvinist, not a chauvinist pig.
Look what he admits to. For those of you who are just joining us for Wednesdays as well, I have as my guest Tom Regani, and our topic is war experiences in spiritualism. And Tom, among being a registered medium and retired social studies teacher, in public school, he is also a war veteran from Vietnam, and he's so graciously sharing some of his thoughts and experiences about things.
And I hope it's making sense to whoever's listening. You know, I mean,
you guys can let us know.
It's an interesting type of situation where part of the responsibility, you want to call it payback. I like that one movie that they made where they said Pay It Forward.
Oh, yes, the Pay It Forward movie, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a marvelous way of looking at the consequences and your responsibility. If somebody does good things for you,
mm-hmm.
why is it so hard for you to do good things for them?
Yeah.
And more importantly, why don't you do good things for yourself? You know, and in our culture, oh, that's an egotistical topic. No. If you don't love yourself,
mm-hmm.
then how can you love others?
You know, there's a difference between being self-centered and being centered in yourself.
Right. And it's sometimes a very fine line,
mm-hmm.
that type of thing. But by wanting to be as positive as possible for others.
Yes.
Okay. And being in the classroom for 30 years, I had some instances where I remembered from my own schooling, which was primarily parochial,
mm-hmm.
and I said, I'm not going to do those things. That's one of the reasons I became a teacher, because I hated the way the people were teaching history.
So that was the big motivation for you.
You know, I mean, when I was in eighth grade, or seventh and eighth grade, it was in parochial school. They gave us a little blue book for history, and you had to memorize it, just like the catechism.
Oh, yeah, all the dates and things.
Right, and they would test you on that. I mean, and then when you got to the exams, yeah, well, you looked pretty good, but you didn't. You had no understanding.
Sure.
You know, and then I get to high school, and I'm looking at this, and I'm going, these people are doing the same thing. There's got to be a better way. There's more to history than names, dates, and places.
There's the feeling and experience and the learning of that.
And what really triggered it, again, comic books. Oh, I'm so sad they don't have comic books anymore.
Well, they have more graphic novels these days. It's kind of gone into graphic novels.
But, I mean, the idea of it taught me that even the nastiest person has to have some center of goodness or people wouldn't be attracted to them.
Quite possibly, yeah.
Well, that goes back to the door to Reformation is never closed against any soul here or hereafter.
Mm-hmm.
So that means even the bad guys get a chance to become good guys.
This is true. This is true.
And
that's something that as spiritualists we do believe and know, that you know spiritual progression is eternal and infinite. You've got however long you need to handle those things.
Yeah, and it's probably one of the least thought of, but probably most controversial, if you think about it, principles. Because
why would it be controversial?
Think of all the bad guys in history.
Yes.
And they're not burning someplace and paying for all their badness.
Well, and one level they are, because when they go through life review, I'll tell you, for some people it's easy peasy to go through life review, and other people it's slogging through mud. And it takes however long it needs to of that individual.
Right, and the hard part would come with the recognition of their responsibility. But a lot of these people fail to take responsibility, yet they're still given eternity in which to make things right.
Yeah, and for some it'll be so very long before they can move on to something else.
And being human.
In the review.
Being human.
So on some level that is hellish. To me, that would be hellish.
Right.
But,
well, if you think there's a hell, I should be going to wind up there.
Right. It's a state of consciousness,
right.
Really. You know, here or there, you can be in heaven or hell.
Right.
And, you know, you being in a war space, there's a lot of people who have served in the military. When they've been in that war space, it feels hellish.
Oh, yes, indeed.
You know, you're kind of in immediately in that kind of visceral yet surreal experience that
I tell people,
you've been explaining of the culture, the climate, the intensity of just having to be at someone else's command,
the
responsibility of your own actions combining
the intensity experienced in combat when being shot at, being shelled, is everything goes in overdrive. Time slows down. Everything's in slow motion. Everything becomes brighter. All your senses are at peak,
you know.
And then when you come through the circumstance, if you're not wounded, or even if you are, you survived. And the rush.
Yeah.
I tell people the only thing that comes close to that is my seeing my son born.
Oh, wow, the rush of that, wow.
And unfortunately, a lot of military people and other, I'd say, law officers, those EMTs and that, they become adrenaline junkies. And
sure.
So they keep looking and pushing and taking
surge.
And
sure.
Taking chances
mm-hmm.
to recreate that aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they become dangerous to themselves and to the community, unfortunately. That's, again, my take on it.
Right. And, there's a certain section of them that do
right.
That.
Right. And the opposite of that is the self-recrimination.
Yes.
Okay.
So how does a person deal with self-recrimination?
That we come back to personal responsibility.
Going back to spiritualist principles.
you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
You know, I talked to the people in the VA, and it was really funny because they said, do you hear voices when there's nobody around? I go, yes. Do you see people that are not here? I go, yes. And they said, well, we're going to put you in a rubber room. And I go, wait a minute, I'm a spiritualist. Well, what's that? I said, in my religion, we talk to dead people.
Yes.
We see dead people. We hear the rubber room. You know, but
you almost got assigned.
Right. And some of the people, some of them will say, I don't want to hear it. I just don't want
to
hear it.
Beyond their capacity.
Yeah, let's not deal with that. But it allows one to look at where one was at that point.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What I did when I was in Vietnam, I did with the idea of this was what was expected of me.
Mm-hmm.
This was the situation I put myself in.
Yeah.
When I leave that, then things change.
Mm-hmm.
But almost as difficult as being in Vietnam was coming home.
Oh, sure.
And being
you've been used to being all jazzed up about this.
Right, and then coming into a situation where the people don't have the slightest idea of what's going on in the sense of what they're seeing, what the news wanted them to see. They're reading what the papers wanted them to see.
Yeah.
And what sells news and what sells paper? Atrocities. You don't see the good things that some of the people did.
Yeah.
Okay. That tried to do the orphanages that were supported, the children that were taken care of, the old people that were looked after, the attempt to understand and become familiar with the culture.
Mm-hmm.
All I saw was that thing. So you come from that environment where you live by the second. There is no tomorrow or you go crazy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And like I say, and there may not even be another hour. So you're always in the present.
Present moment of now.
And then you come back here, and a lot of the things that would have been detrimental to your well-being there are not even thought of. I mean, simply sitting in a room with a light on in the middle of the night. Going to a restaurant that doesn't have wires to keep grenades and other types of bombs out of it. All right?
Yeah.
You know, sitting in a place where your back is uncovered.
Mm-hmm.
People don't understand, and that the fact that if you were in the Army and you were in Vietnam, you were responsible for all the nastiness that they'd been seeing 24/7, especially at dinner time.
Yeah.
So it was a difficult adjustment to get used to this culture again, but then to find out that you're not really appreciated or wanted in this culture.
Yeah.
You know, I was spit on when I got back in the States. People say, no, that didn't happen. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, it did. I got on an airplane in California to come back to New York State, and no American would sit next to me because I was in uniform.
Wow.
So you're looking at all of this, and you're saying, what did I do wrong? What makes me so evil? And you begin to question your core values and your sense of personal value, personal worth.
Yeah.
I did what I thought I was right. I tried to do the best of it, and I come home, and now I'm lower than the lowest because I wear this uniform to do what my country asked me to do. In a manner of speaking, my country includes everybody.
Yes.
And they sent me there, and now they reject me.
Mm-hmm.
And for years, it took things. I'm trying to think. What it's like to go to war is a book written by a former Marine. I'm trying to think of his name. But he was he's a Rhodes Scholar, and he spent a tour there, and he starts to dissect. And this fits in with spiritualism, believe it or not, because what he's saying is, in order to survive, you have to understand that you're not a singular entity. You're made up of all sorts of, and I use this term, mini-me's.
Mini-me.
Okay, and one mini-me likes to do nasty things.
Oh.
And one mini-me likes to do nice things, and, you know, so on and so forth.
Sure.
So when you recognize the nasty mini-me is what's driving you, ask why you let that mini-me get in the driver's seat.
Mm-hmm, because you have choices.
Right, you have choices. And that means you can prevent yourself from being a negative entity.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody, again, and this is with personal responsibility and the understanding of spiritualism, nobody makes us happy. We make ourselves happy. Yeah. Nobody makes us angry. We make ourselves angry. You know, nobody can build me up. And nobody can tear me down, because if I pay attention to somebody else, then I'm saying they're more important to me than I am.
And they're running your show.
Right. And they don't know what I want or what is best for me. Even though and this goes even with the people who think they know what is best.
Mm-hmm.
They don't.
Right.
have that understanding of yourself. And with that, you have to have that understanding of what your limitations are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody likes to think, oh, everybody loves me. No. I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread. No. It's everybody looks at you in a different way. You
yeah.
think you're funny and they think you're crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it's important to understand that other people look at you differently, and what you do for in your head for one thing may be taken a different way. And if somebody reacts negatively, what are you going to do? You're going to just keep pushing that button, or are you going to say, whoa, wait a minute, let's see what we can find out here. We're
mm-hmm.
looking at the same thing.
Sure.
My wife and I, we had some useful and interesting discussions in our time together. And at one point, I don't know exactly where it came, but it just dawned on me. And one day we were having one of these discussions, and I turned around to her and I said, as you see it. Not a good thing to say.
Oh.
But I persisted in saying that. And what you know, what I was trying to get across is, okay, we're looking at the same thing. I'm not seeing what you're seeing, but there's room to talk about this. And then one day she turns around and she goes, as you see it. I just...
You knew one day that was going to get thrown
up again. But I mean, it became sort of a catchphrase type of thing. But it was saying, okay, we're together and we're not, and it's all right.
Yes, it's
all right.
You're part of a unit, but you're also your own selves.
Right, and we grow at different rates.
Yes, and you have your own reality.
Right, and it you know we base everything on our experience. So,
yes.
You know, definitely her experience was a lot different than my experience. Type of thing. So you try to come together because you know that there's a bonding there.
Yeah, it's like where do you sit in the bus? You
right.
have a different view of the world.
Exactly. So, I mean, these things all come together because of that experience in Vietnam
mm-hmm.
of saying, well, I've got to be able to see what's happening, where's it going. I'm not in charge of anybody but me.
Yeah.
I can't change the world, but I can change me, and I can put out an influence that... to those nearby,
yes.
and give them an understanding that they have the choice to make a better world.
Mm-hmm. To raise up in consciousness
right.
about things. Yeah.
However you want to put it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I've tried to live my life once I came to the understanding that there is a focal point, if you want to call it, and that's what I would call spiritualism. It's a,
mm-hmm.
it's a focal point. It gets you to thinking about the world differently, of how you are important and how the world is important to you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, the Native Americans have a great understanding of the world isn't for you. You are for the world. You are a part of the world.
Yes. Yes.
You know, so it is something of you do good for you do. Well with the world, you do well for yourself
mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
and try to do this. I have hugged trees, but I don't do that as a routine.
I'm a tree hugger.
You know, I've also chopped them down. So,
that's okay too.
You know, but it's what's necessary at a given time.
Yes, exactly.
So, but, you know, coming to an understanding that we guide our own selves by what we allow ourselves to accept or reject.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain things that, you know, we can't do. I love the Serenity Prayer.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, my thing is accept those things we can't change.
I know, because you can analyze it to dust and drive yourself nutty.
Right. And, you know, to change what I can... To have the wisdom to know the difference.
Mm-hmm.
This is what spiritualism gives me.
That's true.
You know, and coming from a rigid background, in a manner of speaking, through my family, my earlier religion, the military experience,
mm-hmm.
you come to understand that you have to build within you an understanding, a loving, listening self that understands what they cannot do in
sure.
the world. It's just one of those things.
So it sounds like, you know, during those war years, you really started to kind of develop a sense of your own soul in communication with the divine, and because you felt the lack of understanding from a normal religious perspective. So that you were able to develop more in a spiritual level. Did you feel that your intuition was heightened in that experience, in that sense?
But I wouldn't have,
a different kind of intuition boot camp.
I wouldn't have used those words.
Yes.
Okay, because in many situations, I had no idea that those things even were possible.
Right. At that point, you hadn't put those things together.
Yeah, they don't call it... You had, I guess we're going to call it a sixth sense or a feeling. You know, I've got this feeling.
This inkling, like my gut's telling me.
It's not a good thing to go there or do that or be there, And it was pointed out to me where I really got a handle on this, or not a handle, but an understanding that there's something more out there, was the Tet Offensive itself.
Okay.
I mean, I tell people about this. We lived in a house. It was a small unit. There were six of us in this house.
Mm-hmm.
And when they attacked the city of Kanto, they came right literally through our backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided that we weren't a big enough fish at this point. So what they did is they surrounded us. So we were cut off for about 18 hours surrounded.
Mm-hmm.
And if we showed ourselves, they said, oh, look, a moving target.
And they picked you off.
Right. They shoot at you. Mm-hmm. You know, so eventually we were able to... leave that situation where they brought in the Arvin and we had 15 minutes to get ourselves together and get out, and we wound up at the MACV compound in the end. But we were headquartered out of an old barn about five clicks mm-hmm. out of the city, so we had to go there to check on the information that we had stored there that we didn't want the other people to pick up on.
Mm-hmm.
And there were two instances in that day where we came under heavy fire, and we were in two Jeeps, three mm-hmm. people in a Jeep, and we're going down toward the Kanto University, and the Jeep speeds by us, and it's full of Korean civilians, or at least they were dressed as civilians, and the next thing you know, boom, they're gone, and mm-hmm. we're getting shot at, and let's get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
So we get there, find out the farm's okay, so we're heading back. And we picked up a sergeant and a lieutenant from the MACV as our additional escort and protection. Okay. So all of a sudden we're following him, and he turns into a civilian compound that was euphemistically called Palm Springs, which was bordered by the Bosak River, which is the lowest branch distributary of the Mekong.
Mm-hmm.
We're going in there to evacuate the civilians. Okay. So we're just about to get there, and again, another Jeep goes by us, and boom, boom, they're gone, wiped out. We pull into the compound, and we start coming under heavy fire again. And the old man, he was 35, says, I need somebody to clear the rooms on the other side of the compound. So guess who volunteered? He looks at me and says, go. And eventually, it was like in 30 seconds, maybe a little more, and I'm up against the wall. And I turn and I look back, and I'm going, wow, I made it. And then I go and I look and I go, wait a minute. They're all over there. I'm over here. What do I do? And the old man's yelling, clear the rooms, clear the rooms. And so I said, okay, let's see what we can do to sense what's happening.
So you used your spidey senses.
Right. And because they had windows, and they had no glass in windows, with screens up in the top. So normally you don't look up.
Mm-hmm.
So, the first thing I did is check to make sure the window was clear, kicked the door open, checked the room, and I went down and did like six or seven rooms like this until I had them all cleared.
Mm-hmm.
And then the old man says, oh, you can come back now. So we go in there, and the civilians have a military radio, and we're listening. And there's a helicopter up there as an observer, and he says, oh, we've got a battalion of VC crossing the Bosak. They should land at Palm Springs. There's 10 of us.
Oh.
And there's 400 of them.
Yeah, you're outnumbered for sure.
And I was sitting inside the room, and the next thing I know is I have this strange view because it shows me sitting in this corner. Now, I was standing when I heard this.
Yes.
And I slid down the corner, evidently, because I'm watching myself from the ceiling.
Yes.
Looking at myself and the rest of the scene.
Extra projection.
And I'm going... What am I? I'm nuts. What's going on here? This can't be happening.
Yes.
I'm happened already
maybe
then.
That's how I can do this. Yeah.
You know, so, and then the VC never showed up. And we're trying to figure out. We're still there. And then comes over the radio that there were two returning helicopters. We had just gotten the new Huey Cobras, gunships, specifically designed for this.
Mm-hmm.
They had been sent out on a mission. Mm-hmm. And they didn't find whatever they were looking for. They're coming back to base. They're fully loaded. They saw them in the river, and they destroyed them.
Oh.
You want to talk about?
Wow.
Yeah, okay. Isn't that an interesting coincidence?
Yeah.
Mm. No, there are no things such
right.
as coincidence. So I started to get the idea as the year went on. Having been in a number of different situations, I had three separate assassination attempts on me. You know, somebody up there or whatever.
Yeah, your angel is really the problem.
Wants me to do something. And so what do I do with my life that they're going to say? They're going
to
save me.
Yeah,
of course,
it's really
important
what you do. Yeah.
You know, what do you do with it? With this gift that they're giving you? Because it's all free time, considering
right.
the situation.
You better use it wisely.
You know, and so you begin to search. And again, the search brings me to spiritualism.
So at what point did you find spiritualism in the formal sense?
After Catherine started working in the bookstore.
Oh, okay, here in Louisville.
So she came to work in a bookstore,
mm-hmm.
and she was starting to go to services.
What year approximately was that?
About 88.
Okay. And so that was the foothold, and then you were like, hey, this makes sense.
Well, and she said, would you like to come to church with me? And I go, okay, I can deal with that. And I went a couple of times, and I said, I sort of like what is happening. And then when she turns around and says, hey, I'm taking this class. Would you like to take this class with me? And I go, sure, because do I want to be separated from her? No.
No, you love her so much.
But it was, and so I started taking these classes and coming to understand that there are certain things that I need to do, or I should put it this way, shoulds and oughts and needs, no. It would be best or better for me to move in a different direction.
Sure.
And one of the things that resonated with me is that I'm responsible, and the other one was everybody progresses at a different rate.
Yes, indeed.
And she was way ahead of me. Catherine was way ahead of me. So, you know, I'm stumbling along, and I go to this one healing class, my first introductory healing class, and the gentleman was teaching the classes. I want you to surround yourself this white light of protection. Mine was blue. I'm going,
You wanted to get the A. You thought you were doing it wrong.
You
were doing it wrong. Yeah.
But nobody mentioned this.
Yes.
That whatever color is best to protect you, you know, the white light. Everybody would always say, the white light. I'm going, I have to be strange somehow. Maybe God doesn't want me to do this. How am I going to, you know? And eventually it dawned on me, and I'm going, hey, it's working, so
yes.
That must be my color.
Blue's working just fine.
But see, and the whole idea, the thing is that when people first come to the understanding, things are so different.
Yes.
And again, the idea of personal responsibility, because you decide whether that's a good color or a bad color
right.
or a positive color.
What resonates with you.
Exactly.
What harmonizes.
And what we as spiritualists need to be the best we can is to turn around and let other people know that there is not one, there is a general path.
General, yes.
But you walk it at a different rate, you walk it in a different style, and that as long as you try to live the golden rule and you ask for the highest and best and you give thanks for what you're given, regardless of how small it may think, you're doing and you're moving in the right direction.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
Being human, we don't always go that way.
That's true.
A lot of times we fall back, so we have to learn, it's best for us when we learn to forgive ourselves and understand that this is part of the human experience.
Yeah, because part of spiritual natural law is the law of forgiveness.
Right. And see, that was another thing that helped me,
mm-hmm.
because then I can forgive my, well, I'm still working on it.
Yeah.
But it's that, okay, the idea of I can't change what I did.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to be proud of what I did, but I don't have to make it run my world today because of the way things went.
And I know time's been cooking along. We literally just have a few minutes, and I want to make sure we mention some of the things that are coming up that you're doing. But before I do that, I just wanted to say, ask, at what point did you see spirit?
That's a good question. What,
I'm just curious.
Do you mean, when did I see spirit that it didn't scare me? or when did I know that spirit was there and I thought it was going to beat me up?
Okay, that one first, and then the next one.
The first one, again, was Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came to slowly understand, as I said before, since I was getting through certain situations, that
mm-hmm.
there was somebody out there watching over me. And then I began to...
So you felt spirit loved ones around you or spirit guides?
I would
you
say...
You couldn't quite define it at that point.
I couldn't define it, but I knew that there were entities that were looking out for me that
okay.
if I took the time to think about them... And then when I started taking classes is when I began to see,
yeah.
you know, not fully understand...
Mm-hmm.
The implication when I first started doing messages as a student medium,
mm-hmm.
you know, people would come up to me and they go, well, do you know what that? I'm going, no, that's what they gave me and this is what I gave them.
Right, right.
You know, and it sort of grew up to where now people will come in and say, look, my job is not to tell you what you want to hear. My job is to give you what they want you to know, and
yeah.
you make up your mind what you want to do with it.
Right, right.
And I started out as a healer, and that's what led me to becoming a mental medium.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
they're two sides of the same coin. They're both mediumship.
They're both mediumship, channeling of the divine.
Right, and the best way you can do that is to get yourself out of the way. You don't give up your responsibility.
Right, right. But you get the ego parts out of the way.
Right. It's not
the thinking
me.
Thinking mind
right.
as well.
It's not me doing the healing. It's not me
God
coming up
the work.
With the, you know, your spirit loved ones through the divine give you what, and then it's your choice.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And sometimes you get marvelous, people come back and you'll go, wow. And it's like, hey, okay, keep in mind, spirit got you there. You
yes.
know?
Spirit got you there. And it's good that you recognize that throughout your entire life you've been supported by the divine.
Right. But I didn't feel that in my youth.
Right. But that now you realize that.
Right. Because they're not out to force me in a path that I find confining.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I tell people, if you feel bad about going to church, don't go. Why are you doing this?
And then when you feel drawn to go to church, go to church.
Go to, because
but you know, live from that divine
right.
truth.
Because you put out energy, and if it's negative, it's gonna blossom and come back and bite you.
Yes. Yes.
And if it's positive, and if you go to church because you don't want to be there, what kind of energy are you putting out?
Yes. Indeed. Well, I think it's been wonderful that you've been able to come on the show today and talk about...
I just hope that it's meaningful to you and to other people.
Absolutely. I really appreciate you doing that, and I honor what you did in service of our country.
Thank you.
Very much. And what you do in service for Lilydale is very beautiful as well. Tom is one of those rare mediums that really tries to support the rest of the people who chair the services and... Many times when people are in need of doing messages. So thank you, Tom.
You're welcome.
Now, I want to mention, you know, Memorial Day weekend is coming up, and we certainly honor those that have passed, and I think it's a really beautiful thing that we do honor those that have passed. I know my son is in Scouts, so we do the flag placement in the cemetery tomorrow evening. But the Memorial Day here in Lilydale, there is... at 9:45 a.m. at the Memorial Park. You
right.
You do that on Monday,
that'd
Memorial
be
Day.
10:30, I think it is.
Oh, I saw the flyer. It said 9:45.
9:45, okay.
And there's a wonderful ceremony that they do if anybody wants to come for that. Now, for those of you who want to reach out to Tom, he's not a website guy, but you can certainly... I'll post the phone number if anybody wants to connect with Tom to schedule or to know some of his events coming up. I know you're going to be speaking soon here.
Sunday.
This Sunday
at the Lilydale Spiritualist Church.
I just was there this past Sunday, and it's at the Octagon Building. So this coming Sunday, Tom will be the featured speaker.
And then on next Sunday, the 2nd of June, I'll be at the First Spiritualist Temple in East Aurora.
traveling.
Yes, and then I'll be on the platform in June, the first Sunday of season.
Oh, yes,
and
yes,
I have
for the joint service, yeah.
I have an advanced healing class I'm doing at the First Spiritualist Temple in July, 13th of July.
Okay, so there are some opportunities if you're up in the Buffalo area there.
And plus here.
And plus here, yes. So you can check out Things with Tom. And I think it's been really great to have you on the show. I truly appreciate you being willing to open yourself to experience with us today on Wednesdays with Phyla. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in today. And next week, I will have as my guest, Sharon Hill. We'll be talking about trusting spirit. So tune in here on my Facebook page, Willow Light Medium, next week, 10 a.m., and we'll have a wonderful conversation with her about trusting spirit. Thank you, everyone, for your kind attention. God bless, and have a very happy, safe Memorial Day weekend. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.